All right, we're in sequel world, and you look familiar. You're a niner. What the hell are you doing here?
I'm PMing.
You're PMing. You're an intern.
Yeah, I'm an intern, and I PM in the Microsoft Think framework team.
So who are you?
Well, my name is Christian Linsberger, and I'm on Channel 9 as a guru from time to time, as you might know. And I was also on This Week on Channel 9.
Excellent.
And
you've done some other videos. I saw you in Barcelona.
Yeah, I did, but for that's Channel 8 then. Yeah. So I do also for Channel 8, like that's the student platform. You should check that out. And yeah, that's me. And I'm doing PM work with it, which is like I'm writing specifications, doing prototypes, and trying to build a new feature or a new version of the platform itself.
Excellent. And so what are you working on?
We are working on the Sync framework, which is a framework that allows you to have different kind of computers or endpoints, and you can synchronize them together. Like you could have Outlook and Facebook and synchronize the contacts from Outlook and Facebook with this framework. Which allows you also has like conflict, if you have conflicts and stuff like that, you can resolve them, and it keeps your stuff, you know, in sync. It's not limited to any scenario. You can extend it to your own will,
cool.
So that it does what you want.
Right on. One last thing before we turn to the geniuses over here.
Yeah.
what's your experience been like so far in the intern program, right? So you're interning here. So in other words, they're working you pretty hard, right?
Well, it's like working at Microsoft.
Yeah.
I'm an intern, but I do the same stuff that usually people who start here do.
Mm-hmm.
So they give me introduction stuff, but there's no like difference between interns and people who start, and I get the same benefits and the same as if I work here at Microsoft, but I have also to do stuff that other people do, so other persons do. It's not, there's no difference between me and somebody from the somebody else who starts to work here. That's
excellent. So as a PM, you get to work with developer types like these guys. Right on. Who are you?
I'm Aaron Green. I'm a developer on the Sync framework.
Great.
I'm Andrei Maksimenko. I'm developer in Sync framework.
And you've been on Channel 9 before the Russian version.
Yeah.
All right.
So unfortunately, a little translation here.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, it's good just to dive right in and kind of talk about what the Sync framework is. I mean, Little Guru gave us, or Christian gave us a brief explanation of what it is. But, you know, it's a platform. And so let's talk a little bit about what it is, what it does, and then how it works.
Okay. So, I mean, it's basically a platform to allow users to sync any of their data. Our goal is to be data agnostic, protocol agnostic, store agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
But we basically want to solve the hard problems to allow you to sync data in an easy way.
Mm-hmm.
Is essentially our goal.
Interesting. So, you know, what are we talking about? So if I have a Word document... So, I mean, it's a little bit, when you think about what Live Mesh does, you know, you could argue they do the same thing, right? In other words, I could have a folder on my work computer and sync it with the folder on my home computer, and anytime I make changes in either location, it just, I don't care,
right.
It just syncs. So you're doing a similar thing. But it's not cloud-based. I mean, what is it?
So it's a sync framework. It's a generic framework which allows arbitrary data to be synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of define synchronization process as a set of exchanges between both endpoints which synchronize data and we call them providers. And it's pretty much well-defined pattern of exchanges, and we implement that pattern and we take care of metadata maintenance to properly handle things like efficient change enumeration, conflict detection, and other difficult corner cases which typical sync solution would encounter.
Yeah, it's like the rocket science is built by the team.
Yeah.
So you only need to plug in into that. You only do the easy stuff.
Yeah.
And we do like all these background things that you don't need to worry about because, you know, why would you? You know, you
exactly.
Write the provider and then you say, okay, synchronize, and that's it. So it's then synchronizing with other providers. They all know how to talk to each other, and they have like a common way how to interact with each other, and then you can exchange data. That's how it's built right now.
And I think a key point is that we're not an end-to-end solution.
Mm-hmm.
We're not an application. we are, our goal is to be, to allow other applications to do sync. And so that's a big difference between us and say Mesh, where they're like an overall end-to-end experience. You run this application and it syncs and your data just goes.
Mm-hmm.
But we really want to allow developers who aren't us. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're at Microsoft and you want to develop, that's great too. But
mm-hmm.
we want outside developers to be able to write sync applications in an easy way, you know, where your data doesn't necessarily have to go to the cloud. You could certainly sync to the cloud, but it doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want to allow you to do it in an easy way and
Excellent.
Handle the hard parts.
Now, I'm assuming this is a managed framework, so people will be writing C#?
It's actually both native and managed.
Excellent.
And for native code, we offer COM objects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for those clients or applications which still implement native code.
A lot of them out there.
Yeah, sure.
It's not that, you know.
And, of course, yeah, we offer managed APIs for our framework, so to support, like, whole stack of possible clients, client applications. And interesting aspect about Sync framework is also it has this layered architecture. So on the bottom layer, you have the sync metadata support.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we define what we call provider model, which is those exchange patterns which I mentioned before. And pretty much Sync framework allows arbitrary level of entering to use its services. You can start using like simple sort of level provide the framework level of implementation, or if you if your scenario is really advanced,
mm-hmm.
you can go ahead and start building applications on top of basic sync metadata services.
Excellent.
And really also friendly with Live Mesh as well, because we support FitSync and ROP.
Mm-hmm.
And FitSync is lots of people know that it's a underlying protocol and metadata format for Live Mesh.
Absolutely.
So
we could probably draw that on a whiteboard.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So that
yeah.
we see how, you know, the data flows from one node mm-hmm. to another, or something. You want to draw? Should I? Oh, you want to do it?
What do we want to draw?
Yeah,
let's just draw pictures, man.
Yeah, just draw how it's working. You know?
Okay.
You could draw how like the framework is laid out with the managed and managed stack, and then how stuff synchronizes or something, if you want to. Or should I?
Sure. You know what? We'll do a test, see how it works.
Let's go.
So you need to help me out, because, you know, I'm interns.
I don't know
everything. Okay, like what we have is like this unmanaged layer in the bottom, which is the sync framework for native applications, right? So if you want to plug in here, you can write your own DLL or something that will plug in directly into this native native layer. So you can directly plug into that and then write another DLL, which is another provider or something,
mm-hmm.
and you can then have another native thing and synchronize like that, right? So that's usually, if you synchronize, you always synchronize to an orchestra, like that's the component in the middle that you register your two providers with this component,
mm-hmm.
and then you say synchronize, and it does like the rocket science for you, you know, it figures out where if there are conflicts there or something like that.
And so the engine of this thing is written in C++.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's actually native stack.
Yeah.
On top of this native stack here sits like the managed stack, and this managed stack here is, as far as I know, is all written in C#, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is our C# code that you can use from any managed language that
sure.
you want to. So.
Very cool.
And the thing is the same if you're like in the native stack and you wanna use like synchronize with other nodes, like with another computer or service or something, you can write a provider. But if you're in a managed stack, it's exactly the same. So you can always like start if you want with the native and extend it to the managed, or you can even like interact between managed and native. Can you do that?
From a managed application, you can sync a native provider and a managed provider,
mm-hmm.
so you
which
can,
is actually pretty neat.
Yeah, because you have like, you know, the way you can interact.
So you can implement native provider in the managed code. You can implement native code interface in the managed code.
Oh, you can. That's
cool.
And while you always
it'd be
have
harder, but you
yeah. And what's also very interesting to find out is like you have this stack with the managed MRs, and you can always write like providers, like you have one provider, then you have a second provider, which is like Facebook. You can write the third provider, that's like, let's say, SmackMac. You have a fourth provider, that's then like to your local C drive, and this one is like, let's say, that's pointing to a USB or something drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have in the center the orchestra, and you can say, okay, synchronize everything with everything. So you can say, synchronize this in with this one here, and then this one should also come into play, and this one too. So it's not only synchronizing two providers or two endpoints with each other, but it's more like synchronizing everything with everything.
Cool.
So
I think it's one important note there is that there's no specific topology.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hub and spoke, or it can completely
full mesh
interconnected. It really doesn't matter. The way we do our metadata, we designed it to support that, which is kind of a nice feature.
Absolutely. Now, how complicated can... So that's a provider model, right? So
yeah,
what if I had complicated rules of if this provider changes, these values, then go ahead and sync these two guys. But if it changes these values, only sync with these three guys.
I mean, that is...
That's just up to my...
That's entirely up to your application.
Yeah.
We don't build on those rules. An application can kind of say, you know what, I know of these providers, and mm-hmm. they should sync for these triggers or whatever.
Sure.
You can prioritize if you want to. And
yeah, it's that's like entirely up to the application.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is that you can like define policies here
mm-hmm.
to say, okay, last writer wins or something. So you can like have some kind of, conflict detection, stuff like that. Or you can only say, okay, this one, in my scenario, this my local drive
mm-hmm.
is only going to be a download thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't need to be both directional, but you can also say, okay, this SmackMac is only going to be, upload, download, and the other one is only going to be download, and these both are going to synchronize up and down. You know, you can switch
mm-hmm.
these in like you want and connect them how you want.
Yeah,
it's very interesting.
It's interesting note about direction. So right now our sync session is unidirectional.
Mm.
So if you want to have bidirectional sync session, well, it can be done like in parallel, which is challenging,
mm-hmm.
or it could be done as two sequential unidirectional sync session.
Sure.
So the point of
which would be the better one to do at this point,
right.
given the complexity
yep.
of
yep.
doing
actually,
it currently.
And in our managed framework, there's ways you can specify
a bidirectional
sync, but I mean, it's essentially two directions, and you specify, we have a flag that specifies do download and then upload, or upload and download, things like that. So
okay.
under the covers, it's just two syncs.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Which
I have to say,
today,
this tomorrow's exchange.
Tomorrow
problems.
Could be different.
Yeah,
yeah, you never know.
Yeah, we're flexible.
So you keep, but I just want to, you're mentioning some terms, you're using the term exchange patterns,
mm-hmm.
which is really, and sync is all about exchanging data, or exchanging when to do something on data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just like, I mean, it could be that some people in the audience aren't really familiar with sync in general, right? There's
right.
the concepts of sync, conflict detection.
So,
want to go?
Yeah, try again.
And then we'll jump into the high-level stuff with Little Guru. But I just want to make sure everyone understands core things about sync.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, very high-level.
Including me.
Session, right? So, I'll use... sequence diagram for explanation. So let's say we have an application here. So there is an orchestrator or sync engine, and there are two providers. We will call it source and destination. So fundamental goal of a sync session is actually bring all the changes from the source, which destination doesn't know about, to the destination, and therefore we'll work through the complete sequence here. So application starts synchronization session through, there is like async session in native, which has this method start, I believe. So when you start sync session, you give two arguments to this method, which are source and destination providers. And at that moment, orchestrator starts by asking destination, what's your knowledge, essentially.
To know.
Hmm.
So,
yeah.
So knowledge is part of sync metadata. And it pretty much describes what endpoint has seen, what changes endpoint has seen so far. And it represents this information in very compact form, which is not proportional to number of items which we synchronize, but rather to number of endpoints in the community, which is typically much less. And I will use native method calls, because I'm more familiar with them. So every provider or which implements synchronization access to sync endpoint is called, it has to implement a knowledge sync provider interface. And it has method called getting batch parameters, which returns knowledge of endpoint.
So what's this knowledge exactly?
So knowledge is
it's basically the concise representation of everything that the destination knows, and that includes, it just doesn't include data that the destination has changed, but it represents data that the destination has pulled in from other endpoints, and that's to facilitate bringing in changes, enumerating changes that didn't come from either of these providers.
Okay.
So you could obviously pull in changes from a third endpoint,
like through some other endpoint.
Yeah, or through a different sync. And so the goal is to represent everything you know in as concise and compact format as you can.
Okay.
So once orchestrator called getting batch parameters from the destination, it knows knowledge of the destination. So it passes this knowledge to the source and asks source for changes, and calls get change batch.
So you get like the data, what is missing or something?
Right, and passes knowledge, which is returned from destination.
So basically what we say is for every item, so we have this, the knowledge you can think of as a per replica metadata. Mm-hmm. And then for every item, there's also metadata that you store. At a minimum, you have to store the last version, version being an endpoint ID and a tick count for that. Not a clock tick count, but the other notion of a tick count that we could get into if we wanted to get more involved in knowledge. So basically what we're saying at this point is we're giving the knowledge from the destination, and we're taking over, we're passing to the source, and we're saying, give me all the changes. Here's what everything I know. Give me everything I don't know. And we provide methods on that knowledge object.
That's the definition of knowledge.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So good use of word.
Yeah. And so we provide methods. There's methods on the knowledge object, that interface that we pass around,
mm-hmm.
that make it easy to figure out, oh, I have this item. Should it be included in knowledge or shouldn't it? You know, should I send this or not? And so we provide methods to do that easily.
Right.
So it's not too much to figure out.
Cool.
So once getChangeBatch is called, it's a job of or responsibility of source provider to actually enumerate changes in its store and create what we call a change batch and return it back to orchestrator. And then orchestrator asks destination to apply the change batch. It calls process change batch and passes the change batch from the source. And at that moment, actually, destination typically involves methods of component which we provide as well, called change applier, which is able to do conflict detection and change application, applying changes one by one on the destination.
So until now, let's say until process change batch, there has been no real data that has flown, right?
No.
Only metadata, like only
exactly.
Information on, like, what has changed, what is new, what has been deleted, stuff like that.
Right. I mean, the goal is to not send data until we need to. So
okay.
We send the minimum amount of data. You can think if you're going up to the web or something like that, you don't want to send data if you don't have to.
Okay, it is really heavy, like, huge files.
What is then the real data, you know, like, floating between the source and the destination and stuff like that?
We have component. Let's put it here, actually. Like change apply here. Destination asks change apply to apply changes.
And this change apply is then going to if knows, okay, while something is missing in the destination, so I go to the source and ask for that and
right.
Transfer that to the destination,
right? The change applier's job is essentially to to figure out, yeah, to filter out. You know, it could be the case that the source sent changes it didn't need to. Maybe it wasn't smart about it. The change applier's job is to filter that out.
Mm-hmm.
It also does conflict detection. We should note that the destination, when it calls applies changes, it typically, I mean, there's two ways, but the typical way is that it builds up a list of its own versions for all the changes it got from the source.
Mm-hmm.
So that way it can say, it can look at an item, it might say, I don't have this item, and it might set a flag. It might say, here's my version for the item, you know, I have it, or I have a deleted item.
Hmm.
And in a couple of those cases, we use that information to determine conflicts and to determine new changes. I guess that's the two main things, determine changes that need to be sent and determine conflicts.
Right. Hmm. And for example, conflicts can be such as, for example, if source change conflicts to destination's change, and there is a conflict policy specified by application in the sync session, which says, like, destination wins. In that case, there is no need to fetch data from the source because its change is lost.
Okay, so this is...
Can you turn that light off behind him? We can keep on recording. Just wanted to throw that out.
Right.
Great.
Okay.
Perfect. Because you were getting kind of orange. That's the Netherlands color, right?
Oh.
We're in the Olympic season.
Just Russia's red, white, and blue.
Well,
cool,
man. Belarus, so.
Belarus, even better.
Technically speaking, so.
Cool. All right. So a lot of things go on, and this is just even before we get to data going back and forth, as Christian was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But before I continue, I do want to ask questions that have nothing to do with the sync framework, and that would be, so you're from Russia.
I'm from Belarus.
From Belarus, excuse me. And how long have you been at Microsoft?
Let's see. 7 years.
Nice.
From 2001, I was hired in Moscow in 2000, September,
mm-hmm.
and came to Microsoft to work in Microsoft BizTalk server group.
Ah.
And I worked there till 2004. And then I moved to WinFS.
Uh-huh.
Wait
a minute, WinFS, I heard of that.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
Not at all. Right on, good technologies you
yeah,
got.
Yeah, I said that incorrectly though. I went to WinFS Sync, which is a totally different beast. It's pretty much a foundation of all technologies we currently have. And there is lots of research was done in Microsoft for quite a while.
Absolutely.
In the Sync area, and WinFS Sync was just yet another stage. And now we have Microsoft Sync Framework, which is even further development of that.
Outstanding.
And
so the WinFS lives.
You know what? WinFS lives all over the place.
Yeah. I mean,
most people know that by now.
All technologies developed as part of WinFS effort was really adopted by other products, like SQL Server, especially.
Mm-hmm.
And see.
That's excellent.
Like, an example of Microsoft Sync Framework, you can see that's really useful.
Absolutely. So, have you always been a dev at Microsoft?
No, I started actually as SDET and in BizTalk. So, I worked on testing of messaging engine and
uh-huh.
Did some interesting work with customers as well.
Yeah.
I worked on data serialization, deserialization.
Cool. So, you know, I'm just trying to prove that developers are human beings, man, right?
Maybe.
You know PMs are.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
How about what's your story?
So I've been at Microsoft for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I started in the Sync team, but when I started, we were an incubation group inside of digital media. The week I started, we had a meeting with one of the technical fellows here, and they told us we were getting reorged and moving, and I wasn't even sure if I was working for the company, so I wasn't quite sure what was going on. But so I've been working on Sync Framework since I got here 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was at a defense company doing robotics work for the Army.
Nice.
Like that. So did that for 2 years out of school. So
very cool. So you guys are you spend most of your time writing unmanaged native code? Excuse me, not unmanaged.
Actually, both. Yeah.
Do you write a fair amount of time in both?
Yeah. So we have a pretty small team.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times we try to maintain feature parity, which frequently means you write your feature in native code and then layer it with managed code, you know, trying to figure out how you're going to do that before you start.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say most of the hard work is done in native code, and then the managed code is kind of just kind of polishing it for those.
Sure. It's the API surface, right? For
right.
people who don't want
to... Sometimes we do have real code it's subject to change, right? I mean, sometimes we can do lots of work in native, sometimes we can do some optimizations and do more work in managed to avoid like transitions. So.
Cool. I mean, this is something, because I've been doing Channel 9 now for a while, and I remember, you know, actually trying to create the buzz, you know, this was before Channel 9, about managed code and .NET. And, you know, as time has gone, it's you know, things are starting to settle down into where it makes sense, where you'd use managed code and where you don't use managed code. And so anyway, I always like to ask, you know, how much managed, how much unmanaged are you writing?
Yeah.
Or native? I gotta stop saying unmanaged.
Well, we're in kind of a weird place because we kind of need to support both. We have a lot of applications and a lot of developers who want to do it as quick as possible and as easily as possible,
mm-hmm.
and they want managed code.
Mm-hmm.
But we also work in a lot of areas, devices maybe, or
mm-hmm.
things like that, where we can't provide the full functionality of managed code, and the people writing the applications really want it to be native. They don't want to have to worry about all the stuff that comes with managed code. So we kind of have to hit a lot of targets, and it makes it interesting.
Cool. It's a good segue.
It's also, you know, it's not only a layer on the native API, but it's also, like we mentioned before, like you can do the two-way sync. So it's actually like making it easier for like people who only want to write the managed code to write providers and stuff. But
mm-hmm.
you should always keep in mind the sync framework is for both worlds. So
mm-hmm.
if you're liking one more than the other, you can do everything in both worlds. And that's
right.
actually the way how it should be, because, you know, restrictions in one world is no good, because
yeah,
never
data doesn't
enough.
Care about the platform.
Yeah,
why should it?
Yeah, why?
And
that's
I
the
think
reason.
Who cares?
We do have a little bit of a tough time because we are layered on native code. There is a little bit of a tough, you know, getting the managed code to feel right.
Hmm.
And you know, we do as well as we can. To some point, we could maybe do better if we were completely managed. But
that's a great why. What are the differences besides, say, some data structures, obviously, and then the fact that you have garbage collection on the one hand, and you know, verifiability and
yeah.
things like that.
It's a lot of smaller things, like just the feel of the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whatever they call them, the attributes or the properties. I'm not completely familiar.
That's metadata.
Not necessarily metadata, but like the.
So in the code, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like the getters and setters. That,
got it.
Got it.
Yeah, the things that look real pretty. Things like that. Things like that feel real nice and managed. We can't always expose the right way because of the way we have to do it in native. Things like that.
Sure.
And that makes it a little bit harder, but
mm-hmm.
We think it's worth it to maintain. It's a hard enough problem that we'd rather not write the code twice. And so it's easier just to kind of... focus on the hard problems once, and then do our best to maintain parity. Give, you know, managed providers or managed applications want it to be easier, but they don't want to lose functionality. So it's how do we maintain the functionality in a way that just feels as natural as possible.
Well, and the other thing I would just say, as far as the easier versus complex, I mean, the managed applications, you want to focus on your algorithms, and I don't really give a shit about having to deal with the detritus of memory management.
Right?
I don't care about allocations and deallocations. My mind, I don't want to write algorithms about that. I want to write algorithms about my sync problem.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I get that it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
And in some senses, that's good, because it will make Little Guru more productive if he writes C# than if he's writing C++.
That's true.
But he could do some more, probably faster algorithms in native. But who knows
but,
what the...
You know, it also depends... Because, I mean, since we are, there's no difference between writing in managed or unmanaged for this platform here,
mm-hmm.
I can always choose, you know. I could start with a prototype in managed,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, I see, okay, there's a lot of data, so managed is probably too slow for me, for my scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I can switch over to unmanaged. I won't lose any of the features, so I won't, you know, it's not like managed is having a lot more, or native is having more.
Absolutely.
A lot more. So that's also the message that we should give, is like,
oh,
in
yeah.
our team we build for both platforms. It's not just, you know, one and the other is like, okay, we do it, but, you know, some kind of,
mm-hmm.
it's like we are really focusing
right.
on both.
That's
I mean,
good.
That's the one that we do.
Sure.
I mean, even when we, you know, we've had times where we've written providers, I wrote an application with the Sync framework, and I was like, you know what, I'm not a UI person, so I'm going to use the Windows Forms and just do it all in managed code. And it was a lot faster to develop than,
mm-hmm.
you know,
than
something
MFC.
Else. Yeah. Yeah, a lot faster than MFC. So in that sense, it's definitely faster to develop it in managed
cool.
code. So.
Great. Well, I'm sorry that we jumped down this rabbit hole, but it's fun because we're humans. And it's good to talk about. Now we can get back to the platform story. But actually, you know what? You guys, what release is this for you guys? What's the release number?
This is
RTM of V1.
This
yeah,
is V1 RTM.
V1 RTM, yes.
But we also, ADO was V2, mm-hmm. am I correct?
Yes, and we also have CTP1 for Microsoft Sync Framework
exactly.
for
devices,
which is just released last week, I believe. And lots of people actually asked for this feature. So you could enable smart devices.
Yeah,
cool.
So we should note that the ADO.NET Sync services also came out of our team, another part of our team, because we work on the core, like the underlying technology, but ADO.NET Sync services that released with SQL Server is also built on top of our stuff.
Cool.
And one note to the devices thing that came out last week or something,
mm-hmm.
is like you have now a Sync framework also for the device, which means you can run it on your phone.
Cool.
And synchronize, like, let's imagine you take a picture with your phone and you want to synchronize with Facebook or something, or
mm-hmm.
SmackMac or Flickr.
Mm-hmm.
You can always keep, like, your folders on your phone in sync with, like, your Flickr account or something. You can download, upload, and that's something that a lot of people are looking forward to.
Cool.
That's also something because, you know, we are also, like, focusing on making the application and the framework fast because we know we need also to serve, like, platforms that are not having that much memory or CPU power,
mm-hmm.
and therefore we try to keep the platform as fast as possible. So,
cool.
Keep it best.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So when you design a platform like you were just mentioning, design it to be fast in low memory constraints and kind of weak processing constraints. What about for the opposite? You know, I have a terabyte of RAM. I mean, that's ridiculous. But pretend, and I have 80 cores. So I wanted to just, I don't care, right? I just wanted to blaze as fast as humanly possible. All kinds of crazy features. Do you also design for that?
It's a good question, but as our experience with SQL Server folks shows, there is not enough memory always. Even on 80 terabyte machine, there is, like, depends on the workload, right? I mean, typically, these machines are not used for a single customer, they're used for, like, tons of requests and stuff. And you need to load balancers and handle them as fast, as efficiently as possible. But again, like you need to take care of things like possible resources shortage, and like you are not allowed to crash if memory allocation request fails. You need to gracefully report that to application or higher level, and then it's necessary.
I mean, I would say in our first release we haven't thought about that a lot, but
we do.
We do have some people working on some stuff that are thinking about that problem more.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's still something that we're trying to figure out. We're kind of in this weird... we're in this kind of weird place where, like, on one hand, we're getting a lot of people who want to sync data like contacts to my device and databases and kind of local data. And then we're getting a lot of people who want to sync up to the cloud. And those behave very, very differently, the interaction patterns. And so we're trying to figure out how we can kind of meet in the middle, kind of make everybody happy in the best way that we can.
Absolutely. It's a hard problem and one that's common amongst at Microsoft, given the ubiquity of our platforms.
Mm-hmm. Actually, exactly because of our position in the middle, we have some design choices in framework. Like, for example, we never allocate memory which is given to a user, and pretty much tell user how much memory we need, and they allocate it and give it to us. Also, we don't do any threads, so all threads must be given by, for example, for change application, you can have asynchronous change application,
mm-hmm.
which can be done like on a thread pool or
sure.
something. So, and we don't reallocate any threads for this work.
Which is good.
Yeah, I mean, this clearly was designed for service scenarios like RESTful abilities, streaming photos.
Excellent. So what are some of the cool new features? So because we keep talking, this is a framework, this is a platform. Let's talk about some good new features, some features in V1 that a developer should get excited about, right?
I mean, to start out, I think knowledge is pretty interesting.
Indeed.
Just the idea of representing the metadata and what that means, you know, it's because it not only does it provide a way to concisely represent things, it also means if I'm in the middle of a sync and something bad happens, I can still recover from that in a future sync. My metadata is consistent enough that I'll only represent what I know or a little bit less, so I'll never miss anything. I'll always see something new, which is pretty important. And it just provides a mechanism for solving a problem that has existed for a long time. How do you do two-way sync and figure out what changed as opposed to sending all of your data? And that's a pretty big deal. Features other than that?
We're sort of trying to expand our stack of technologies which we offer. For example, in V1 we have some like metadata store, which we really didn't mention today. And so it's help for providers to implement storage and retrieval of metadata on top of SQL CE, I believe. And we also have existing implementation of file sync provider which can be used to synchronize folders, and it's really useful pretty much to implement like sync toy, which is by the way also implemented on top of sync framework. People would need to take existing file sync provider and tell what each folder to synchronize and achieve the same. And
so now is this just to ask, like, for a server side scenario, right? Say I know that this very, you know, this group SQL is an incredibly innovative team, and they do all kinds of very interesting things, one of which being Velocity, which there will be a going deep on Channel 9 in the not-too-distant future on that technology. They have a sync story. Are they using your framework?
Velocity is, I know, does not use our technology.
Okay.
Yes. So it's
that's just
because,
CTP. Yeah,
I mean, it's probably not because of lack of functionality or something. They have a little bit different requirements. It's a good question because sync framework enables a bunch of scenarios which don't involve data synchronization between different endpoints per se, but it's local cache, what we call it. And it's really interesting if you remember Outlook does the same. So if server connectivity fails, it uses local cache to work with message store, and sync framework allows to do exactly this.
Cool.
Speaking of other features, we also have, like I mentioned, fitting control support, which is really cool. For example, if you want to build your application, like on smart mark synchronization capabilities, and you want to integrate that with Live Mesh, you can do it.
Excellent.
It's also interesting to mention that you said already about this metadata store. But when I wrote my first provider here, you had to, you know, to get familiar with the framework.
Sure.
Then it was very convenient to use because you have all this metadata that you actually, I didn't know how to store it, you know. And I just used the metadata store and did all for me. So I had to say create this file where I wanted the metadata store to be. But then I said use that as store. Do. And it did.
Nice.
And that was cool because otherwise you have this data, like there are versions, then there are replica IDs, then there are version ID timestamps, and it's a bunch of data that the sync framework uses to understand what's going on. And if you give it this metadata store, it magically does, you know. I didn't need to care about it, I just said that's the position, that's the path, that's the directory where I want it to be, and that's
cool.
It. Gave it an ID and that's it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you really shouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, our goal is, you know, if you're a guy writing a provider that's going to run on a local machine, it should be easy because you don't necessarily care how the data is stored. If, you know, if you're SQL Server, maybe you do care. And so for the people that don't care, we want to provide easy ways to do that. For the people that do care, we're built such that they can do that on their own and they can still interoperate with our stuff just fine.
Interesting.
Let's say I want to start with writing a provider. What interface do I need to implement? You know that, guys?
Manage to native.
Native. There's kind of three
interfaces, and we kind of tried to abstract out the functionality because you might not, you know, if you're factoring your code really nicely, you might want to use different classes and all that stuff. So the iKnowledge Sync provider, which kind of speaks metadata. I mean, it returns knowledge and works with that. The data retriever, which is how you return your data,
mm-hmm.
and then the change applier target, which is how you save your data.
Cool.
So the change applier speaks
with the data retriever and the change
applier.
Yeah. So when this guy, when we go back up to here, this guy would return the data retriever here, and it would get passed. He returns the orchestrator, and the orchestrator passes the destination, so that the destination could pass it to here. So that would be the data retriever. The destination would also pass the change applier target to the change applier. So now he's got a pointer to both sides. The change applier is a pointer to both sides of the equation, and he'll just call get change data or load change data from the source or from the data retriever, and then call save change on the destination. And then all you have to do to get it to work is you just have to. Your providers have to agree on a data transfer interface, which is, you know, inherits from iUnknown and just allows as an agreed upon way to get at your data.
What doesn't inherit from iUnknown?
It's same as object.
I like the name better. It's better than object.
Yeah, we left it flexible so people or provider writers rather could actually implement arbitrary transfer interfaces. For example, for file it could be iStream. Or simple like contacts, it could be property store, property back.
Cool.
So, yeah. It's really flexible.
Yeah,
so could this be used in a client like Internet Explorer for some useful syncing?
Actually, we already have a team that released on a year ago internal release. Windows Live Favorites guys who mm-hmm. were in the toolbar and did the favorites, they were built on top of us to sync favorites up to the cloud.
Nice.
Live
favorites.
Yeah, I don't think, could you access your favorites online? I think you could, but a lot of the functionality was, you know, sync my favorites over to anywhere I connect. If I log in, I get my favorites wherever I am.
Sure. So in other words, you'd have to build a client and server piece, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I do care about what's, so with the cloud model, I can't just, you know, write my client without having some intelligent, so in other words, the knowledge that I get is sort of, you know, masked in an already small degree of understanding so that I can understand it.
Right, right.
And crack it open and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a server component in this model if I want to use your framework in the cloud.
Yeah, we should note that all of the code will run, however you do it, will run on one machine. And so what your one provider will be essentially a proxy. So you can imagine that if you're doing a sync up to the cloud, your destination provider, if you're going up, your destination provider might be Windows Live Favorites cloud proxy, and
sure.
it handles all the HTTP calls, whether they're REST or whatever it is.
I can illustrate that. So let's say we have this application component, which talks to sync session, sync orchestrator, right? And orchestrator talks to providers.
Training.
Indeed. It's coming down hard.
Winter's coming early in the Northwest.
Right. Solves. And typically the provider is built on top of some data store. Can be arbitrary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is typical, like what Aaron mentioned, by local machine scenario, because most stores are on local machine and it all runs in the same process. It's like process bounded here. And because providers are DLLs, and Microsoft Sync framework itself is also a DLL. And if you want to make it remote, for example, like there is a cloud service here, so this provider actually becomes a proxy, and it delegates calls through some
cloud
And there is like real provider, destination provider. All the stuff. And so this guy actually has its own data store as well and lives in the cloud here.
Okay.
And this is our remote instability mesh.
Yeah, you can also do something else, like if you have like, let's say this one is like phone or something, then you cannot store like metadata here. But as far as I know, you can then say, okay, I want to store it here or something. You can move this metadata as you want. You know, if the device or something doesn't provide space to store, then you store it. You use like this built-in store database that allows you to store easily and to store it on your computer, like for your phone or something, if you want to write a provider for your phone. Or if it's like a cloud service, a database in the cloud, you could directly store the metadata in the cloud so that everyone has the same metadata. You know, you can move it around as you like it. So
that's the device thing is actually pretty interesting because there's kind of a continuum. There's a device that can't store anything, and in that case, it's kind of worst case if you can't store anything there because if you connect to another machine, there's none of our sync metadata there. Then kind of the next step up is a device that doesn't understand sync, but it can at least store a blob, and we can just put our metadata on there and try to be smart about how we enumerate changes. And then there's kind of the next case where the device can do some sort of dirty bit on things that change and allow you just to be a little bit smarter and faster. And then there's the best case where the device can actually maintain sync metadata in sync. So we kind of will work in any of those scenarios. The amount of work that needs to be done on the PC side might be a little more, but our goal is to be able to provide all of that.
And we're trying to improve provider writer story easier by providing more and more services for each. We call those things our participants, which Sharon described. For example, really dumb participant as we call a simple participant. We don't call it dumb. So there is like a partial participant which doesn't understand sync metadata but can store it. And so there is full participant which can do anything with sync metadata. There can be something in between, but pretty much there are just these three categories. And we are trying to provide more and more services for each participant type. So people would be just, for example, in the future direction, we're going to introduce some things for single participants who those providers will just simply enumerate all their data and we'll just detect ourselves which data has changed.
Cool. And just so that I don't have to edit that, he's making no guarantee that it ever really will ship. He's just stating that they're working on it.
It's something we're
thinking. Now I don't have to edit it. See how easy it is to do editing on Channel 9?
That's what we're thinking about.
Right on. That's cool. Excellent. So, little guru, you're a niner leading the discussion here. What else is... what else should we talk about?
Well, we covered
it pretty well.
I mean, it's like, as mentioned, the future is going, we are still committed to both platforms. We're going to make stuff easier. It's already easy. You can use it from managed, unmanaged. You can synchronize whatever you want. And you should, I mean, you can use our providers already that are shipping with the framework, so you can build something easy like synchronization with your USB stick or something if you want to, or use SyncDoy, which is really a lot of people using it and that application builds on top of it. And yeah, that's something that's going to be very important in the future because it's more and more people having devices and data on devices. They want to synchronize this data. They have like different, I have at home like my Xbox, then two computers, my phone, why shouldn't I synchronize these with each other?
Absolutely.
But that's something why I'm also, I was interested in being interning here, because I think this framework is something that's going to be important in the future.
Interesting. And it would be interesting to see how it gets used in the single instance case. In other words, not interoperating with devices. I'm on my one machine. I mean, I'm WinFS, man. All right. Let's, what I'm saying is, this on my own machine today, my file system, my core OS. There is sync that happens, obviously, but not to this degree. So I'm just thinking about writing client applications that could sync without ever going to the cloud in order to get metadata. That's really what I'm just trying to spit out. And I think that's a really interesting scenario that we don't explore
enough. It's like really harnessing the power of what's sitting in front of us as developers, and then having a way for multiple applications running in a single session to be able to interoperate and sync data, because a lot of our data is the same.
Like if you have an Access database and it has contacts and you want it into Outlook and you want...
Even if, I mean, what I see is like if you have legacy databases and you have like, you want to write like a new application that builds on, let's say, .NET or something, and, but you cannot like say, okay, we are going to remove the legacy database because there's other applications running in there. You could use something like this on a server to synchronize the data. So you have like one box, one session running, and it's only synchronizing between two databases, data, or even, you know, file system with database, you know, something like that. So that's something that's really interesting for people who are running legacy code, but won't expect, you know, create new scenarios and stuff.
And I think the thing that we're excited about is, you know, in cases like this, we're certainly thinking about problems like that and the best way to help developers solve those. But the cool thing is that we don't have to write all these solutions. Like, the idea of the framework is that developers come along and take their store and write a provider. You know, we hope that, that in some ways a community develops where people say, for this store, I wrote this provider. You can use it to sync if you support this interface. And somebody says, cool, I could do, you know, I could sync this to this. And it could be things we haven't even thought of. But the idea of this is that it's easy. I mean, you, we basically say, if you support our metadata, if you sign up to implement this interface, it just works, you know. And so, I mean, that's, I think that's what we're excited about, is that we could go and write providers for everything. Well, no, I don't think we could, because we wouldn't have time.
True.
But even better, developers can do it.
Of course.
Essentially, also what we need to do better is to build community in the web of provider writers, and so people could leverage each other's providers.
Well, hey, you have a PM right here. Just put them to work. Community. Throw some community activities on them. You're a great
Channel
community
9,
guy.
Go for it.
Sandbox, Channel 9.
Yeah,
but you know, that's a fantastic point, because that's precisely exactly why we build platforms. It's not because we already envisioned all of the houses and structures that are going to be built on them, to use that metaphor. We have no freaking idea. And the real success of your platform is going to be if a lot of people innovate the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's successful.
Yeah.
Because that means they found it to be innovative.
It's mutual benefits.
You got it. So good luck, and we will try to... You know, it's hard to just build community. I mean, it's funny at Microsoft, people, you know, I get emails from people like, Charles, we'd like to build community around. It's like, dude, man, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, and, you know, this is hard because it's different than an open source project where you can get developers together. I mean, it's kind of interesting because you just have to write a provider. And so that's not... It's a decent amount of work, but it's not a lot. It's not the kind that you need a whole open source project to do. So the real question is, how do we get people to write providers that can talk to each other, and move data in an interesting way?
Well, why don't you create something on CodePlex, where you create like a provider farm, and you go ahead, little guru, put up your code sample with your code on CodePlex and say, hey, let's grow a provider farm.
Or a provider garden.
It's an interesting
idea. It's definitely something that we've talked about. I'm sure one of our other PMs has brought that up at some point.
And we have a bunch of samples too. Cool. We have Sync 101 and things like that. And
perfect.
Samples.
Yeah, on our
forum, and people are really encouraged to ask questions, and we'll do it.
People in our forums from the team.
Yeah.
Checking out what's going on, and if people are like having issues and stuff, we try to help out and
sure.
Always keep in mind too that this framework is like, you can hook in wherever you want, like from very complex to very simple. Mm-hmm. So it's actually built exactly with developers in mind. So you can start wherever you want. You can hook in. You get like, if you start very low, you have a lot of work to do, but you get everything you want. You get very flexible. You can go up until you see, okay, that's the way where I want to go in. You know, that's what I need, and everything else I don't care. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the idea. That's what I got in my first week, was we want to make it simple. So dev should be easy for them to develop stuff. Right. You know,
absolutely, and not even the pro dev, right?
Yeah, right. Well, normal dev.
Totally. Yeah. So, you know, hobbyists.
Excellent.
Well, hey, great to meet you guys. These are the people that are writing the code. So,
yeah.
And then focus little guru, that. Man. Yeah, well, you're here. It's a really interesting. I mean, I must say, it feels great that you're a Niner sitting in the Death Star with me.
Yeah.
Camera, Niner. So Channel 9 is where we're going to post this,
right,
obviously.
Right.
And Christian's been a long-time outsider. Not an outsider, a Niner. But outsider from the perspective
right.
that he's not on the C9 team or doesn't work for the Empire.
Right.
And
he's,
so...
Now I'm
finally getting to see behind the curtain.
Now he's getting to see behind the curtain. And that's really what we've always tried to do. And behind the curtain is a very nice and warm and fuzzy place, which he's learning.
Yeah.
Right. How many mean jokes did you get when you told people you were interning here?
That's, yeah, well, it was like,
enough.
You know,
yeah.
You will never come back.
Yeah.
You'll assimilate.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what I was coming up.
So about to be in front. I saw your picture in the bus. Well, I mean, not in the bus, but on Channel 9.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was. But,
yeah.
But that, you know, that's actually a cool point. I mean,
it looked like fun.
Well, it's,
you
it's
know, why are you so excited about working at Microsoft? There's plenty of other. You guys are developers, which means you could work anywhere in the world you wanted to. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So why here? I mean, this isn't a recruiting video. I'm just curious.
Okay. Yeah, I think a big thing is impact. You know, at my previous job, it was more R&D, and so I wrote a lot of I thought really cool code that. If I was lucky, the guy sitting in the desk next to me would use. And here, you know, you get, you know, millions of people are going to see this and use it, and that's exciting, you know. And I think that the people are actually a big part of it. Like, there's some really smart people here. I wouldn't claim to be one of them, but. But there are just some brilliant people here, and it's neat to see them work and to work with them.
Sure.
And yeah. Just see how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can, like, exchange ideas with them.
Sure.
That's something you, in a small company, would never do, you know, like, sit in a meeting, like, chat with, you know...
With a technical fellow who might have happened to create some big part of the internet or the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, seeing people you've heard of, you can look them up in the address book and... Email them if you want.
Totally, and they'll respond.
Yeah, that's true.
Time.
Actually,
not
be
that
careful.
Have, but
they all respond.
I've written Steve Ballmer before, and like a Sunday afternoon after.
Well, I did that too. Actually,
he replies.
He replies. That's true.
Other things which I particularly like is that first of all, we're doing lots of cutting edge stuff, like Thin Framework itself. It's pretty interesting. Also, we do work with many, many different teams in Microsoft, very cool projects going on, very lot of cool prototypes on top of Think Framework, so it's very exciting and very interesting to work with different technologies, for example, like this release for devices. There were some things which were a little bit different between like desktop version of compact framework, .NET framework and compact framework on devices, and we try to deliver as much functionality as possible for this release, yet preserving richness of desktop version. And also, it's very important that we have some customer reach. We try to, what I particularly like is that you can talk to a lot of customers and actually get feedback and get influenced by their feedback and try to influence their solutions. And
that's outstanding.
Yeah, I would say...
That's the kernel of community right there. You just said it.
I would say that Microsoft is surprisingly hands-off when it comes to developers, if they want to, interacting with community. You know, I'm on the forums, and I've never been told, don't say this or don't say this. Obviously, there's, like, confidential stuff, but...
Sure.
But aside from that, you know, the blogging policy is pretty, you know... Be smart. That's
it.
Pretty much it. You know?
Totally.
And
is
so,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it's don't be stupid. But be smart is a political correct way to say it.
but just the idea that there's really, you know, a lot of devs. I mean, I don't have a lot of interaction with the community. I'm kind of heads down and you know working. But a lot of that is as much as you want to make of it. You know, there's certainly well-known devs at Microsoft who are well-known not because. I mean, it's just because they make the effort. And
Raymond Chen, for example.
Yeah.
Raymond Chen.
He automates all that, though.
He's a robot. Yeah.
I knew it.
But, yeah, just that idea that we can if we want, and it's surprisingly hands off. It's
totally.
Yeah, what I found interesting in like my 3 weeks mm-hmm. something, is that if you're like asking people to modify something in a product or something, they do that. I was never expecting that. Like, if you want something because you need it, you know, they help you really out.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like a small. It's a big company, but it's like a small. If you company, you know,
absolutely.
If you want them, like, yeah, could you do that and that? Oh, we'll find a way for you, and you know, like, it's really someone they're interested in you.
I think a lot of people really like just like technology and like
yeah.
solving problems, and so
yeah.
even if
it's a new puzzle for them,
even if it's a little bit more work for them, a lot of people are willing to kind of. Do some extra work if it'll enable a really neat scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that across the board, or I found that in my interactions with other teams.
Absolutely.
And it's actually a really good experience to work in our team because, like Aaron said, our team is very small,
mm.
and it's really good. It's like family, so we support you and stuff, support
awesome.
Each other. And
outstanding. Well, hey, thank you guys for doing great work,
thank
and
you.
I really hope this is successful. And little gurus, you're going to be reviewed on the success of the Sync framework. You realize that, right?
That's his commitment.
Oh, I'm so scared.
No, it's going to be great, man.
Yeah.
Right on. This is really cool. I have to tell you. It's just really
before we go,
really
we
cool
should
sync.
Mention our site, our MSDN site.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
MSDN.com/sync.
Easy enough.
So pretty easy. And we have a blog, link to blog there, link to our code gallery with all the samples, and then all the documentation and the forms where
cool.
you probably get to talk to us.
Excellent.
If you have questions and stuff, you know. Come into forums, read the blog, enjoy the website.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And innovate the hell out of this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, you guys. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
Thanks.